This is the podcast from JNS Pediatrics.
Hello, this is Natalie Pincham. I'll be reading summaries of articles on spinal instrumentation, infection, and craniosynostosis published by JNS Pediatrics on September 26, 2014. Soft tissue defects after spinal instrumentation in 5 children. Risk factors, management strategies, and outcomes. A clinical article by Christina Sayama and colleagues. Wound dehiscence and infection after spinal instrumentation in the pediatric population poses a challenge to the spine surgeon. In this paper, the authors retrospectively reviewed 5 cases involving male children, ages 3 to 17, treated by the NeuroSpine program at Texas Children's Hospital. They had returned to that institution because of spinal instrumentation erosion through the skin. In this study, the authors discussed the types of procedures used to repair soft tissue defects and outcomes. They analyzed the use of local tissue flaps in managing these complex cases and identify risk factors contributing to this complication, such as young age, poor nutritional status, multiple prior operations, severe neurological deficits, and history of radiotherapy. Removal of spinal instruments at the initial revision should be avoided to prevent subsequent instability. Instead, the authors advocate using soft tissue flaps to cover the prominent spinal instrumentation. If infection occurs before arthrodesis has consolidated, consideration should be given to leaving the hardware in place and suppressing the infection with antibiotics until osseous stability is achieved. Use of vascularized soft tissue coverage and prolonged antibiotics speeds healing, clears bacteria, and eliminates dead space, obviating the need to remove contaminated spinal instruments. No functional deficits were associated with advancement or transposition flaps. The preoperative incidence of raised intracranial pressure in non-syndromic sagittal craniosynostosis is underestimated in the literature. A clinical article by Stephen Wall and co-authors. Most patients who present with sagittal craniosynostosis have a significant scaphocephalic cranial deformity that requires surgical correction. However, a minority do not have surgery, either because their deformity is sufficiently mild or because parents decline surgery for an aesthetic indication alone. Raised intracranial pressure can occur in sagittal craniosynostosis and is a further indication for surgery. The Oxford Craniofacial Unit offers intracranial pressure monitoring to all patients with sagittal craniosynostosis in whom non-operative management is contemplated. Between 1995 and 2010, non-operative management was considered in 45 children, 39 of whom underwent intracranial pressure monitoring. Raised intracranial pressure was found in 17 of these patients, an incidence of 44%. The presence of raised intracranial pressure was not predicted by the severity of their cranial deformity, the presence of papilledema, symptoms suggestive of intracranial hypertension, or positive radiological findings. The 44% incidence of raised intracranial pressure in this group is markedly higher than other published rates. The monitored group had a higher mean age than the remainder of the cohort who underwent surgery without prior pressure monitoring. The authors therefore suggest that the likelihood of intracranial hypertension may increase with age in non-operated cases. The authors advocate intracranial pressure monitoring in all patients in whom non-operative management is contemplated. Thank you for listening. The JNS mobile app is now available in iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just search for JNSPG to download the app for your mobile device today. For more information on how to submit your research to the Journal of Neurosurgery, please visit thejns.org and click on Info for Authors.